and welcome to this week's Expert HR podcast with me, Ellie Gelder. All employers will have to deal with the matter of holiday and pay their staff accordingly for time off on annual leave. But the question of how to calculate holiday pay, in particular where overtime and commission is involved, has led to some confusion, and it's been addressed by the European Court of Justice in a number of cases, such as Locke and British Gas Trading Limited, and Williams and Others and British Airways PLC. So what is the answer? With me to guide us through this complex area is Principal Employment Law Editor Stephen Simpson. So take us back to the beginning of the holiday pay saga, Stephen. What started it all?
So back in 2011, we had a seemingly esoteric decision from the ECJ, Williams and British Airways. So that case was about whether pilots on annual leave are entitled to receive flying allowances, which are payments for the amount of flying time that they do in their holiday pay.
And what did the ECJ decide in Williams?
The ECJ decided that the basic principle is that any aspect of pay that's intrinsically linked to the performance of a worker's tasks must be included in holiday pay. In the case of the airline pilots, that was an allowance for the time spent flying, and that had to be included.
So that was specifically about airline pilots. So why was that case so important?
That case was about the working time regulations in the civil aviation industry. The principles have proven to be applicable in the main working time regulations too. So Williams has effectively wiped away the orthodox view from previous case law that holiday pay has to include only a worker's basic pay.
Okay, and were there any other holiday pay cases that went to the ECJ?
Yes, so if Williams went under the radar a bit at the time, then the next ECJ decision on holiday pay certainly didn't. So that was the decision in Locke and British Gas, which brought commission into the holiday pay equation.
Okay, so just remind us then about the Locke case.
So that case was referred to the ECJ by an employment tribunal to consider a British Gas salesperson's pay package, which was heavily reliant on the commission he earned. When he went on annual leave, he lost the opportunity to earn commission, which meant that his commission payments further down the line would be lower than if he hadn't taken any leave. So he brought a tribunal claim for unpaid holiday pay, specifically an unlawful deductions from wages claim.
And what did the ECJ decide in that case?
So the ECJ held that the Working Time Directive requires holiday pay to be calculated not just on the basis of the worker's basic pay, but also on the basis of commission that would have been earned.
And what happened next with that case?
So the case went back to the UK Employment Tribunal, which, to cut a long story short, read words into the Working Time Regulations to comply with the Working Time Directive. The tribunal felt bound by the ECJ decision and the reference it had made to the European Court, and bound by the EAT decision that had come out in the meantime in Bear Scotland and Fulton. The case we'll come back to in a moment.
Okay, so was that the end of it, or was the tribunal decision appealed?
Yes, and the EAT agreed with the employment tribunal. The case has just been appealed again, and it's just been heard in the Court of Appeals, so we're now eagerly awaiting that decision.
And on that note, and hot off the press, let's hear from our employment law editors Fiona Cumming and Chin Mu, who have just attended the Court of Appeal hearing in Locke.
This is Chin Mu. I'm here with Fiona Cumming, and we've just attended the Court of Appeal hearing. So what are your thoughts, Fiona?
Well, we certainly heard a lot of argument, but I think one of the interesting points that came out of it is that if the court decides to agree with Mr. Locke, which of course we don't know at this stage, but then the court's view is that the additional words must have a narrower ambit.
The parties agreed with the court that the additional words to be read into the working time regulations should only apply to cases like Mr. Locke's. So this would be where a worker has regular hours but receives individual results-based commission that would be part of his normal remuneration.
So it's the outcome of the work and not the amount of work done.
Right.
We'll keep the site updated as and when we hear more on that decision. So Stephen, we've discussed commission. What about overtime?
So this was the second key area of controversy, and it takes us back to the Bear Scotland and Fulton decision that I mentioned a few moments ago.
And what happened in that case?
So road maintenance workers at Bear Scotland, plus workers at two other employers, Hertel and Amick, brought successful claims that their employers should have included regular overtime in their holiday pay.
And what type of overtime was it in Bear Scotland?
So the case involved overtime that the employers are not contractually obliged to offer, but that the workers are required to perform if asked.
And were the cases appealed?
Yes, and they're all bundled into one and decided together in EAT.
And what did the EAT decide?
The EAT decided this type of regular non-guaranteed overtime must be included in holiday pay calculations, although the EAT did attempt to place some limits on the potential for workers to succeed with claims for historical non-payment of holiday pay.
So how did the EAT place a limitation then?
So by saying the two deductions from wages can't be part of a series if they're separated by more than 3 months, so that essentially means that the workers can claim back pay only in respect of unpaid holiday if they've consistently taken annual leave no more than 3 months apart. If there is a 3 month gap, the deduction no longer forms part of a series.
Okay, so some small consolation for employers there. Did the EAT say anything else important?
Yes, so importantly, it also concluded that radius allowances and travel time payments have to be included in holiday pay calculations. That's something that's sometimes forgotten when we're discussing Bear Scotland and shows the breadth of payments to include in holiday pay.
Absolutely. Have there been any other cases about overtime?
So the other key case is Paterson and Castlereagh Borough Council. That was a Northern Ireland Court of Appeal decision in which an engineer did regular overtime for his employer, which wasn't reflected in his holiday pay.
So what type of overtime was it in the case of Paterson?
Although his contract of employment was silent in overtime, it was clear that the employer was not obliged to offer overtime, nor was Mr. Paterson required to undertake overtime when it was offered, so it was purely voluntary on both sides.
I see. And what did the Court of Appeal decide?
So the Northern Ireland Court of Appeal said in no uncertain terms that purely voluntary overtime should be included in holiday pay. However, the court did say that only if overtime is regular and permanent enough to have become part of the worker's normal remuneration.
So that was the Northern Ireland Court of Appeal decision. So what status will that decision have for employers in England, Wales and Scotland?
So the decision is not binding in courts and tribunals outside Northern Ireland. However, it's going to be cited in holiday pay cases in those jurisdictions and may be persuasive, particularly as it appears to be consistent with the previous case law that we've been discussing.
So Stephen, can you just sum up then for us, where are we with holiday pay at the moment?
So firstly, I'd say that European and UK case law has made it clear that commission and overtime must now be included in holiday pay. Secondly, other allowances intrinsic to the performance of a worker's tasks, such as travel time allowances, are also covered. And employers may be safer assuming that other payments should also just be included to be on the safe side. And then thirdly, strictly speaking, the principles apply only to the 4 weeks annual leave under EU law and not the extra 1.6 weeks under UK law. However, the administrative difficulty of having two different calculations means that it may be easier for employers just to include overtime and commission in the whole of the 5.6 weeks.
So employers may be best just to exercise caution then. So anything else to highlight?
It's really important to say that none of the cases we've discussed have provided guidance on how averages of commission and overtime should be worked out to decide on the amount to be added to holiday pay. So it's really up to the particular employer. We know from our own survey that the average amounts are sometimes worked out over 12 weeks, or alternatively, the average could be over a longer period, such as 12 months. So it really depends on the type of work and the sector in which the employer operates.
Okay, thanks very much, Stephen. That was a really useful overview of holiday pay. You can get further information on holiday pay by going to our Hot Topic, which you'll find on the right-hand side of Expert HR's homepage. And that brings us to the end of this week's Expert HR podcast, which you've been listening to with me, Ellie Gelder. We'll be back next Friday, but until then, it's goodbye from us.